Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
WGN. The Monkees were TV, radio, and record companies and the music business all in one. Add in a splash of comedy and the band and the TV show became an international sensation. The Monkees' first single, Last Train to Clarksville, was released in August of 1966 and quickly headed for the top spot of the Billboard charts in tandem with the band's self-titled debut album, which held the top slot for 13 of the 78 weeks it remained in the top 200. By the time the TV series aired its final episode in March of 68, the Monkees had seen three new albums top the charts. The final tally, 16 million albums and 7.5 million singles sold in a mere 2.5 years. Mickey Dolenz is the only surviving member of the 60s rock group and will revisit the band's hits, including Daydream Believer, I'm a Believer, and Last Train to Clarksville, along with other songs, when he takes on the stage next Wednesday, April 13th at Joliet's Rialto Theater. You can get tickets at rialtosquare.com. Here is music legend Mickey Dolenz.
Hey, we're the Monkees. And people say we monkey around, but we're too busy singing.
Wow, what an intro. You should introduce my show with me on the road.
I'd love to. Well, I mean, honestly,
you're
just somebody I have really grown up with and have been able to, you know, see you generationally since I was a kid. Like, I was thrilled to see you perform in 2011 with Peter and Davey. It was the 45th anniversary tour. It was my kids' first concert ever. And I got to tell you, yeah, it was their first concert ever. And I got to tell you, you sound better than ever, my friend.
Well, thank you. I work at it. I train. I try to take care of myself, and I work on keeping my voice in shape. You know, you have to when you do that many kind of concerts. I actually started a formal training kind of late in life when I started doing Broadway musicals, and you know, that's 8 shows a week, and some of them require a lot of big singing. And so touch wood. You know, my parents were also singers, and so I learned from them. And I think, frankly, a little bit of it for sure is genetic. You know, but I'm hanging in there.
Well, I was going to say, you came from genetically from a family of entertainers. Your mom and dad were both in the business.
Both singers, both actors. Yep, my mom played piano. My dad sang light opera, that kind of stuff. My mom was a big band singer and sang, you know, Billie Holiday bluesy, you know, kind of stuff too. And my sister and I, we grew up. My sister does the show with me; she'll be there.
Cool.
We grew up absolutely in a showbiz family. It wasn't your typical sort of Hollywood Beverly Hills showbiz family. We lived out on a ranch with horses and chickens and and stuff. And then, as you probably know, I had that series when I was a kid called Circus Boy.
Yeah, that wasn't any local production. I mean, that series ran on NBC and ABC. That was a big deal.
Oh, it was a network show, yeah, like the Monkees. In fact, it was the exact same studio.
No way.
Yeah, absolutely. Screen Gems Television, it was called at the time. Now it's Sony TV. It was Screen Gems Television, and it was, as you say, NBC, and the same network that the Monkees showed on. And both of them took place almost exactly 10 years to the day. I went for an audition for Circus Boy when I was 10 years old at Screen Gems in Hollywood, and I went for the audition for the Monkees when I was 20 years old.
Wow.
And it would have been in the pilot season exactly 10 years later. In fact, when I drove up for the Monkee audition to the gate, the barred gate thing, the guard there at the gate said, "Hey, Mickey, you're coming back."
That's great.
He'd been the same guy that was there when I was doing
that. That's fantastic. That is awesome. Now, is that something, Mickey, that you wanted to do because you've seen your parents do it, or was it something they kind of pushed you into? Like, how did you get on the show? Like, what propelled you?
A good question. I was definitely not pushed into anything. I mean, I almost didn't even go to the Circus Boy audition because I had a baseball game. So it was simply kind of following in my parents' footsteps, my father's footsteps, shall we say. But absolutely no pressure. My mom and dad, they were definitely not. My mom was definitely not a stage mom. You know, eyes and teeth, honey, eyes and teeth. I didn't have any training except watching my dad do it and my mom sing and my dad act, and but no stage school or anything like that. I just basically followed in my father's footsteps. You know, it was the family business. I got lucky, of course, with Circus Boy, but I'd already done a couple of screen tests even before that. So after Circus Boy, my parents took me out of the business very wisely, because those are the tricky years, you know, for a child star. You know, after you're big and famous, and then all of a sudden at 14 you're a has-been. So they wisely took me out and back to school, back to a regular school. And then after high school, I started to dabble. I'll tell you frankly, I went to college to be an architect.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to be an architect, and if I couldn't make it as an architect, I'd fall back on showbiz. And then
not a bad deal,
I was into architectural drafting for at least a year or so or more, and when the Monkey audition came along, and I wasn't a fool. I knew the power of a series, and of course, and but no, my plan was actually to be an architect.
But you were playing guitar a little bit early on too. I mean, but that was kind of a side thing. I mean, but you were, you know, you were focusing on.
Well, again, my family was musical, into music, and my father got me originally starting classical guitar, Segovia kind of stuff.
Great way to start.
And, yeah, I was 10, 11, you know, years old, and I was okay for a little kid. And then I would take my guitar when I started going to junior high, middle school, and then high school. I'd take my guitar to parties and play a little bit of, you know, Malaguena or something. And the girls would say, "Do you know any Kingston Trio?" And I said, "I'll be right back." Hang down your head. And that got me into folk music, of course, early 60s. That's what my generation was getting into. And then that morphed into rock and roll, and I started playing in cover bands, doing rock and roll stuff. And I talk about it a little bit in my solo show. I do mostly Monkey material, of course, but if I do something that's non-Monkey, I usually have a story. And for instance, I do Johnny B. Good by Chuck Berry, and I tell the audience it's because that was my audition piece for
the Monkees. Right. And I'm thinking about this too, Mickey. So how did you get the call for that? Because I know there was like eventually like 500 people that auditioned for this, but did they know you from Screen Gems? I mean, just like you said, the security guard, they knew who you were.
I didn't go to the cattle call. One doesn't go to the cattle call when one has had his own series.
Right. Yes, of course.
No, I had a private audition because, of course, I was, even though the Circus Boy had been, you know, a number of years earlier, I had done some, you know, kind of one-off guest starring things over the years.
Right.
In my teenage years, Mr. Novak and Peyton Place and some of those early, late 50s, early 60s television shows. So, no, I had an agent, you know, and so I went to a proper private audition, and then, and it was extensive, those auditions. Boy, I'll never forget. It was way, way more extensive than a normal television series. Auditions, you know, where normally you'd go in and read, maybe get a call back and maybe have a screen test. But in this case, there was acting and singing and playing an instrument and improvisation and scene study. And, you know, they clearly had in mind that they wanted us to you had to be able to sing and play to get through even the first audition. You had to be able to do that. So clearly, they had in mind that they were going to, hopefully, if the thing went on the air and it did well, that we'd go on the road. You know, the closest thing I think's come along in a while that was similar in paradigm would be something like Glee, where it's a TV show about this imaginary glee club, but they can all do it. They're very talented. They can sing, they can act, they can dance, they can do it all. In fact, I understand they go on the road, too, if I'm not mistaken.
But the one thing is, none of them really knew each other before they all got together to work together, and that's kind of what this was. Although, all of you had musical backgrounds, but y'all played different things, and they kind of looked at you as, you know, playing what it looked like on screen rather than you actually knew how to play it. So how long did it take producers to actually allow you guys to play together?
Well, that's a real long story. You know, a couple of documentaries even been made about it. Yeah. No, when we were hired, as it were, they said, "You're the drummer." I said, "Cool, where do I start?" And I started to learn. They had already started recording stuff before they even hired us, because they had to for the production of the television show. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I wasn't that bothered one way or the other. I understood, you know, the business and Hollywood and television and stuff. Mike and Peter, especially Mike, I think were very... well, they've gone on record saying, Mike especially, he was very disappointed. You know, they had led him to believe, so he says, that he would be able to sing and write and record his own music. And the thing snowballed so quickly that I think it sort of got ripped out of everybody's hands, you know, at a very, very early age. And we had our palace revolt, as you may have heard, and we won the right to at least have something to say. We had nothing to say about the early recordings, not who was going to write them, who was going to sing them, who was going to play on them, which ones would be released.
Right.
You know, we didn't even have approval of album covers. That changed, you know, after the first two albums, which, by the way, I'm very proud of the first two albums. I mean, they're huge, and there was wonderful, wonderful material written by the likes of Boyce and Hart and Carole King and Neil Diamond and, you know, huge, wonderful writers and great songs. And then the third album was Headquarters, which we decided to do entirely ourselves, and I'm really fond of that album, too. It's not a bad album at all. And that's just literally the four of us. I mean, we even did the catering.
Yeah. That's cool.
That first year, we sold more albums and singles than supposedly the Beatles and the Stones combined. But, the power of television and the show just resonated. But it isn't one thing. You know, people say, ask me, what was the secret of the success? And there is no secret. There's no formulas. If there were, there'd never be a flop. But you surround yourself with, you know, talented people and people that share your vision, and you work hard, and you hopefully avoid the pitfalls and the mistakes. And then the way I look at it is that one day, the whole just becomes greater than the sum of its parts. One of the producers asked many years later, what was the secret of success? He said, we just caught lightning in a bottle. And I think you can say that about, you know, any successful endeavor, like a TV show or a movie or a song or a play. All of a sudden, it kind of ignites, you know. And I don't think you can reduce it in any way and say, oh, well, it was just the TV show, or oh, it was just the writing, or it was just the singing, it was just the acting.
It was everything.
It's everything, and like I say, the whole becomes greater than the sum of its parts, and it takes off.
Dave Plyer on 720 WGN, and we're talking to the legendary Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees. Mickey, long before MTV, the Monkees really pioneered the music video.
Yeah, we didn't call them music videos. They were called romps.
Was that right?
We called them the romp. And every script had a romp in it, or two sometimes. And that was to have footage to do something over the song, the new song that was going in the show that week.
Right.
And so usually it would have been a chase scene. But, you know, I hate to claim paternity in these cases. If you look back at some of the movies, Hollywood movies of the 30s and 40s, they had music and they had dance routines. And look at the Marx Brothers. They would have you know, video over a song.
Interesting. Interesting comparison.
You know?
Yeah.
And so there are other examples of music, Busby Berkeley musicals. Look, I mean, look at that stuff. I mean,
yeah.
You know, so there are other examples. And, but in terms of using a 3-minute video to promote a 3-minute song, yeah, I guess we probably were one of the first or the first to do that. But we called them romp section.
Wow. Well, let's talk about your drumming style a little bit. It is so unique, and I love when you play the drums on stage.
Well, thank you. I have great fun doing it. You know, I'm okay at what I do. I'm certainly not any kind of a session drummer. You know, I never had to play anything that I hadn't already recorded.
Mm-hmm.
But I love playing, and I do love playing. I play a little weird, you know, it's kind of backwards, the setup. And I played even on this latest album we did, Good Times. And I do love playing. When we do monkey shows, I play.
You do everything.
A lot. But when I do a solo show, I don't tend to, because over the years, you know, us singing drummers do tend to come down more often and sing up downstage, because frankly, you know, it's like it's pretty boring to go to a concert and not be able to see the lead singer who's
sitting behind
a bunch of cymbals.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
So I talked to Phil, you know, in the past, and I've talked to Ringo, and you know, it's inevitable. If you're singing the lead, people want to see you downstage singing the lead.
And speaking of the Beatles, I mean, you got to know these guys. I mean, you guys were going along very similar paths, and at some point you guys got to get together and hang out a little bit, got to know each other.
Well, quite a bit.
Yeah.
But way back from the 60s on, I mean, you know, the thing about the Beatles is they got it. They got what the Monkees was all about.
Yeah.
That pop sort of excursion into reality versus fantasy, that whole thing. They got it. John Lennon was the first one I remember ever saying they're like the Marx Brothers, and he was so right. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
In fact, the Monkees was a whole lot more about the Marx Brothers than it was the Beatles. Because on the television show, for instance, we were never famous. We were never successful. Whereas if you look at Hard Day's Night or Help, which are obviously wonderful movies, mm-hmm. the Beatles were famous. They were the Beatles, and they were successful, and they... And that's what it was about. But on the Monkees show, on the television show, we never made it. We were always struggling for success. And that, I think, is, again, one of those little key elements that the producers wisely incorporated. And that's also what helped, I think, sort of resonate amongst all the kids around the U.S. and the world that were in their basements and their garages, you know, trying to be the Beatles, because ultimately that's what the Monkees show was about. It was about this imaginary group living in this imaginary beach house trying to be the Beatles.
Yeah.
And
great guest stars.
That's what it was about.
But it was fun, and it was light, and you know what? I got to tell you something. It surprises me that you say you were struggling from a TV show's perspective to be big on television, and yet the show, 5 decades later, still, you know, is so popular with just about every generation. You know, people love watching that show.
Well, I think that is one of the reasons, is that it was about the struggle for success, and everybody, especially as a young teenager or early 20s, you're trying to carve out a space in the world, and that's what we were doing. We were struggling to make a living. I mean, it does beg the question of how we afforded a Malibu beach house when we never got any work.
Oh, that was the fun of the whole show.